You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th, hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
All right, welcome into this Friday edition of the Longhorn live stream. My name is Jerry Hamilton, joined by CJ Vogel and Rod Babers, lifetime Longhorn. We got a lot to talk about today. Spring football practice, two practices in the books, no practice today, back on the practice field tomorrow on Saturday around the coaches clinic, which Sean McVay will be speaking. Busy weekend on the 40 acres. Obviously, some recruits on campus. We'll get a little bit from CJ Vogel here in a second that Texas fans will want to hear about. Texas basketball on to the round of 32 for the third straight year. And I'm going to get into why that is very impressive, considering the game last night was not impressive. And then the Texas women as the number one seed. Take on Drexel. If anybody can name the mascot, you get CJ Vogel's hat. Drexel at 2 p.m. today as the women have the first two games in Austin this weekend, hoping to advance on to that Sweet 16. So a lot to hit on, guys. Zane Petty's already calling it. Texas will beat Tennessee. The student takes down the teacher. I'll say this before we get into anything. Rick Barnes in his post-game press conference last night said something so interesting. You know, Chris Ogden was the first recruit for Rick Barnes at Texas ever when he got to Texas. Okay. Frank Haith at one time was an associate head coach for Rick Barnes. Frank Haith and Rodney Terry were coaches on the Final Four team with TJ Ford. Chris Ogden was a player on the Final Four team. Then when Frank Haith took the Miami job, Rodney Terry became the associate head coach. Chris Ogden was an assistant under Rick at Texas and Tennessee. And I say all that to say this. What did Rick Barnes say last night? Those guys are going to know how my mind works. The game within the game Saturday is going to be interesting a little bit. But, guys, let's hit on spring practice first. Then we'll get back over to the NCAA tournament. And why, if you just watched Tennessee and St. Peter's last night, you think, oh, Texas is going to lose by 30. Why that may not be the case. Of course, Texas can't shoot 1 of 14 from 3. All right, guys, two practices in this spring. You know, one of the things, CJ, I know you have some notes as well. Drexel Dragons, hey, Rob gets CJ's hat. It's been a good run, man. But so I think you had to look that up, honestly.
Yeah, he did. It took some time.
Yeah. So here's what I've heard. Then I'll get to what CJ's heard. Then we'll get Rod's thoughts. Offensive line, the first two practices this spring versus the first two practices last spring, I've heard is way ahead. And does that mean they're going to win the whatever offensive line of the year award? No, but way ahead of where they were last year at this time. As a whole, starting group as a whole, and they should be. It's a mature offensive line. It's a mature program in the offensive line right now. And the other thing I've heard is there's a lot of excitement around Amari Nyblack, a lot. So, all right, CJ, I know you have some notes as well, so I'll let you get into those, and then we'll get Rod's thoughts on spring ball, his thoughts going into third practice here.
Yeah, Bobby actually made a nice note of it this morning as well on Texas football. But one of the more impressive notes that I've received so far is actually on Billy Walton and what he's been able to do thus far in the Longhorn edge room. You know, we've talked about it, kind of the new additions to that room. You talk about Trey Moore coming in from UTSA, Colin Simmons, the five-star coming in, and as well as Colton Vosick, just getting back to the field. You know, this room is getting very crowded. But Billy Walton, I mean, really impressive, has that great BGO. I mean, has tremendous burst and acceleration around corner, or the corners of the offensive line. Really impressive so far. I've been liking what I've been hearing, and he looked really impressive again on Tuesday whenever we were able to stop by for the first media availability. That's one to watch. And then on the receiver spot, look out for Aaron Butler, because you watch him run his routes a little bit. They're pretty smooth. He's got some juice to him. He's a guy that can make some noise in that wide receiver room. Again, a lot of bodies in that room. Preaching development and being able to stay your path is something that Sarkisian and that staff has done a tremendous job of so far for Aaron Butler, and a guy who is, you know, really coming into that wide receiver room with a lot of bodies right now. It's going to be vital to keep him on his own path moving forward. But he's looked good through a pair of practices so far.
Yeah, there's no doubt that Sark is stacking the Texas wide receiver room. I mean, it's unlike anything we've ever seen. I mean, I was on campus when you had the 3 5-stars in Roy Williams, B.J. Johnson, and Sloan Thomas, and those guys were awesome. Roy Williams, the only one that was drafted in the first round. But, you know, Texas has only had, you know, 3 receivers in the modern era drafted among the top 50 picks. And now you're about to have 2 of them in the first round. And Sark wants to turn Texas into their own own version of wide receiver U. And they've never really been that. They've had great wide receivers all throughout Texas football history, but never been had a reputation for producing elite wide receiver talent. I'm talking about first round, second round guys consistently. I think Sark wants to develop that kind of reputation. And after this draft, he'll be well on his way, because after this, I think you'll have a guy like Isaiah Bond who will be in that conversation. And you got some of the young guys through the pipeline, like a Jontae Cook, and then you got Ryan Wingo after that. I think that's what he wants. And multiple avenues to do it. The guys who are coming in the transfer portal can now see themselves doing it, like an A.D. Mitchell, possibly an Isaiah Bond in the future. And then the guys coming through the organic traditional recruiting through the high school ranks can also see, hey, like Xavier Worthy or like a Jontae Cook. So he knows how to pick wide receivers, man. He's got an elite talent for that and a very wide receiver friendly offense too, in terms of the productivity and the other targets for those guys.
Hey, Rod, I want to ask you this. With the talent at running back, the depth at running back, I actually had somebody earlier this week say they think they could have 5 running backs drafted out of this room. Ooh. That means
that's wild.
Stevion Redd's probably the only one not. That's wow. A lot of. Why might we see more pony package this year? And I know you'd love it.
Man, why not? Why not see more pony package? I mean, they have their own analysts back there working behind the scenes, behind the burn orange curtain. And if they're looking at the same numbers I am, and I know they have better numbers than me, probably. They got more, kind of deeper analytics about this and more deep dive analytics. Guys, the 2 tailback set, whether it be 21 or whether it be 20, because Sarkis used both. But when he goes with 2 tailbacks, it is the most – your explosive play rate is the highest among any personnel grouping. This is for the last now 3 years, guys. 3 years. We got multiple – we got different running backs in those 3 years, different quarterbacks, all right, quarterbacking and the offense during that time period as well. And even I could even take it back to Tom Herman, actually, with my notes, if y'all wanted to do that. And we won't do that because there's no need to do it. But during Sark's tenure here, there is no personnel grouping that's been more explosive, more efficient, all right, and more effective than the pony personnel package, 2 tailback sets. And I originally thought it's just because Bijan and Rojo are just that good. That's what it is. And I said I'm going to keep track of it just to prove the theory that it was a Bijan and Rojo thing and they were special. And I was wrong. It is not just a Bijan and Rojo thing. It is a pony personnel thing. It is a pony personnel package thing. It's 21 personnel. And Nick Saban actually talked about this. He went on a show. I still have it in my phone. I can send Matthew the audio one day because I saved it because I was like, that's it. He talked about how very few teams actually practice against power personnel groupings like 2 tailback sets. and 21 personnel, even with an old school fullback. He actually remarked there was a time where his defense, Nick Saban's defense, the greatest defensive mind in the history of the of college football, he said his defense didn't know how to line up against an I formation. They didn't know what they know. They were like, "Coach, what the hell is that?" And he's like, "What the hell? It's an I formation, guys. Y'all know what to do." It was against Tennessee. They lined up in the red zone.
Eye roll on that. Can you imagine Nick Saban's eye roll in reaction to that?
Yeah, but at least he's humble enough. He said, "We don't work on it enough. Nobody does." He said, "Nobody works on going up against 21 personnel and I formation anymore. They don't work on those things anymore because you don't see it." So in itself, it is a kind of a built-in advantage because teams don't even work on the angles to the football, the leverage, the blocking angles, all that when it comes to two tailback sets. They never see it. They never see it. So, yes, more pony package, especially when you got the running backs they do.
Yeah. Hey, Jerry, I wanted to ask you, because I talked about it a little bit yesterday. We get a lot of 10 personnel comments. This one from Todd Lacey is another one. But I talked a little bit about why the tight end was important and why in a Sarkisian offense it bridges the gap from the running game to the passing game. But I wanted to get your thoughts on if, you know, it's viable that you see a 10 personnel package or if it would even succeed in the SEC when it comes to needing protection for your quarterback and obviously still, you know, keeping the mismatches on the field.
Yeah, so I think Nyblack gives you more versatility, right, to where you can keep him on the field in a weird way. But the tight end is going to be vital for Texas, guys. I think the one thing is in the pony package, that's going to take probably Gunnar Helm off the field if they run that a little bit more, potentially, right? That's the one thing. But I, you know, look, I don't think we're going to see a lot of 10 personnel personally. I just don't think that's where this thing's headed. Not to say you won't at all, Rod and CJ. I don't think that is where this is headed with Sark and the SEC.
No. If anything, it'll be a complimentary kind of a boutique package for Sark. If he want, and kind of matchup based, right? Kind of based on the matchup that we can see something, hey, man, we can exploit it if we put 10 personnel out there, one back, zero tight ends. Now, when he was at Bama, he did have the red package, which was a 10 personnel package, but he had four first-round wide receivers, including and a Mechie back there. So he essentially had five NFL wide receivers to work with. I don't know if this group of wide receivers, maybe – I don't know if this group will inspire him to break out that 10 personnel package. It is in his repertoire. He has gotten, but I don't know if he will. He is on the record for saying tight end is the second most important position in his offense behind quarterback. And if he likes Nyblack that much, or if he likes Gunnar Helm, he loved him from JT Sanders. So JT Sanders pretty much never left the field where he was going 11 or whether he was going 12. And 50% of all Sark snaps, and this has been consistent since he's been here at Texas, are 11 personnel. That's it. That's the heart and soul of all his personnel groupings, and everything else changes after that. But 12 personnel is usually the second. That's one back, two tight ends, the second most, second highest usage of personnel groupings behind 11 personnel. So I'm with you, Jerry. I think he wants his tight ends out there. We just got to figure out if he likes, and we'll find out early on if it's Hunt, Gunnar Helm he likes more, or if it's Amari Nyblack he likes more in those sets. And if he likes both of them, then you're going to see a lot of actual 12 personnel with two tight ends out there possibly, because Sark wants to play bully ball every now and then, depending on the matchup he's going up against. So I'm with you guys. The reason JT would unlock the offense, pay attention to how much JT Sanders moved, how much he shifted, how much he was in motion. He was in motion and shifting more than any other player on the offense at like a top 10 rate of players all throughout college football. And that's what Sark means. And CJ mentioned it, the connection between the spread principles and the power ideology. Essentially, that is the tight end position, because Sark can switch and he can be malleable between both down to down within the down by simply motioning that tight end out to the slot or shifting him out to the flex or putting him in the backfield as an H-back. And it can make him a power set or make him a spread set. And a defense will have to adjust to that.
Yeah, so to that point, if Nyblack can handle everything on his plate that JT Sanders did, your 10 personnel is going to include Nyblack in the slot. That's essentially, I think, what we're going to be talking about, right? I mean, so as a pseudo wide receiver flex, I think that's where that will head. But like Rod said, that's a lot to take in. I mean, that's JT Sanders had a lot on his plate within the scheme. So if Nyblack can handle that, Texas can get him up to speed. Watch out. Hey, guys, before we have a lot of questions, We're going to take your questions. We're going to talk football, recruiting, basketball. I want to get the CJ's thoughts on Brandon Brown coming up. But for real quick, I need to take a second for the sponsor of today's Longhorn live stream. That is Andy Ludicky, MyPerfectFranchise.net. Are you stuck in the corporate rat race with 2 weeks PTO and no control over the money you can make or your schedule in general? Call Andy. He'll take you through a process to help and find a business that will fit your skill sets and financial goals. Franchise ownership isn't for everyone, but if you have a desire to take control of your destiny, call Andy or email him at andy@myperfectfranchise.net. Thank you very much, Andy Ludicky, for being the sponsor of the Friday Longhorn live stream. Bobby Burton's been through that process, has great things to say about Andy Ludicky's process. So thank you very much to My Perfect Franchise for being the sponsor of the Longhorn live stream. All right, CJ, we see your questions. We have a super chat we got to get to from Juan. But CJ, Brandon Brown has arrived in Austin. You happened to see him, run into him a little while ago. Tell Texas fans kind of your thought, because I've seen him before. I went to O'Galley High. Kind of your thoughts on Brandon Brown and kind of the conversation you had with him.
Yeah, great kid. He was very fun to talk with. Making his first trip down to Texas this weekend and then heading down to Houston tonight for a 7-on-7. Or I guess, Jerry, this is new for me, but a 5-on-5 tournament for the big boys on the offense and defensive lines. That's going to be a lot of fun tomorrow to see the highlights from. But I was able to sit down with them. We'll actually have a video this weekend. Just a one-on-one. Me and Brandon Brown sitting there talking recruiting, talking about where he got his athleticism from, because it's a funny story. He says it skipped a generation. A lot of his uncles and aunts have a lot of athleticism. And, you know, he jokes around with his mom a little bit because it seemed to have missed her and went straight to him. But awesome kid. A lot of schools are still fighting for his recruitment, his verbal commitment from Texas. Obviously, he is committed to Texas. He is giving Texas their due diligence at the moment. You know, ready to meet Kenny Baker. That's a big part of today. Ready to see DKR. He says he's excited to go see what it's like in the facility, around the stadium, and around campus. He's been to a number of campuses, Texas A&M, Tennessee, Miami, Florida, Florida State, LSU. He's ready to see what Texas is all about. And moving into the SEC and all the gadgets and gizmos that Texas was able to display at home games last year, that's something that he said, you know what, I'm ready to see it. I'm ready to see exactly what it's like to see a game in person at Texas. Obviously, he'll get a little bit of the shell of that today in the middle of the day. It's a beautiful day, by the way. I thought it was a Saturday until today. But, hey, it's about 68, 70 degrees, not a cloud in the sky down here in Austin. If you're out here, go to Zilker. Get your feet on some grass because it's beautiful. But, hey, Brandon Brown did say Coach Bo Davis at LSU is after him still very heavily. I would say that there's going to be a lot of schools right now to keep an eye on. He has official visits to Tennessee and USC locked in right now. Texas will split the two of them. And it's looking like right now he may be adding another one to the list very soon in the near future. But Texas has its hands full on this one.
That's what he's weighing right now by chance?
I did not. He looked slim. I did not expect him to be looking as slim as he was. I think he's listed at 325, 320.
285. He's around 280.
He looks 285. Yeah, he looks 280. That looks like a healthy weight.
Yep, yep. All right, question, David Rawls. Rodgers or Newman? I think David Rawls is asking Lamont Rodgers or Jonte Newman. Both of those tackles are going to visit officially June 14th through 16th on Texas Football Broke. Lamont Rodgers' official visit news yesterday, I believe 2 days ago actually was. Look, I think Jonte Newman right now, but Lamont Rodgers subject to further evaluation. And I think, look, Texas has 9-10 offensive linemen scheduled for official visits. E. Kim's asked on here, is there a board right now? Well, Fasusi's at the top of the board. John Mills is at the top of the guard board, that I can say. They could both commit tomorrow. They won't, but they could. And then after that, I still think there's some room for movement on the board. You know, 9 official visitors right now, I think that number is. Nick Brooks will – I think he's going to make an official visit from JFK and Cedar Rapids. That's going to be 10. We'll see after Josh Petty what happens with Josh Petty. But I expect 11, 12 offensive linemen to officially visit in June for 5 spots. And I think the way it'll continue to play out. Look, I mean – Texas really likes the Coleman twins, brothers. I guess there's triplets. So the brothers at Cedar Hill, they really like those guys. They're strong, powerful players. They're both coming in June 21st through 23rd. But I do believe this. I think Kyle Flood's going to take another look at those guys in May ahead of these June official visits. Kind of take that last look. There's a lot of Jackson Christian at Fort Natchez, right? I mean, there's guys around the state. There's a few out of state. But I think the evaluation process continues almost until the very end with some of these guys. That's the best I can say. You know, we had a super chat there. I don't know. CJ, can you bring up that super chat from Juan? There's some scuttle butt that Texas has taken a look at a portal from a D-line portal from Indiana. Look, I think Texas is going to contact a lot of guys, do some initial process. But I can say this, the top targets that Texas would have are not in the portal right now. Does that mean Bolitti couldn't be one of two if they take him? I think that's going to depend on who jumps in the portal in the spring period. Mm-hmm. I think that's going to be key to look at. Moving forward. One thing I want to say on the Texas hoops, and that people can bring their questions, football and hoops. I looked at the NCAA tournament and a couple things. How many teams have made it to the round of 32 in the three consecutive NCAA tournaments ongoing right now? I don't know what people would guess that number would be, but this is kind of this is where Texas is at with their win last night. Kansas has won 17 round of 64 games in a row. So ultimate tip of the cap to Bill Self. That's amazing, right? He hadn't been upset in the first round in 17 years.
Crazy.
That's wild.
Wild. Especially in today's college basketball. Creighton has now made four in a row. So they have continued their streak. Gonzaga, their streak moves on. Tennessee, Rick Barnes.
Oregon?
Nope.
Oh.
Michigan State. And Baylor soon to be. That'll be their fourth in a row. That is it. Houston wins today. That will be their fourth in a row, which they will. So What are we talking about? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 teams. Texas is eight. One of eight teams. Auburn's trying for their third in a row today. So after today, it could be 9 teams. And all of college basketball will have been to this round of 32 in the last 3 NCAA tournaments.
Wow.
So just, it was an ugly win last night, but I wanted to look that up because I knew it wouldn't be a dozen teams that have been the three that have won 3 straight round of 64 games. But Texas at the end of this day is probably going to be one of 9 that have. So tip of the cap, that's big for the Texas program. Yeah. I mean, there's no doubt about it. It was an ugly game last night. The only other thing I want to say about basketball before we get back to, and Samford, I got to say this. Samford got the Lawnmower 5.0 taken in live basketball last night. One of the worst calls you will ever see in basketball with a game on the line.
Yeah.
Samford got absolutely hosed. So Bill Self's and now they would have to score on Kansas, right? It was 90-89. They got a BS call on a clean block. Ref anticipated the call, and that would have gone back Samford's way with numbers because the Kansas player was on the ground after getting his stuff thrown. But here's the thing too, like for Texas fans that hadn't watched Tennessee all season, but they watched them last night after Texas. All right, let's go look at Rick's team, and you saw them obliterate St. Peter's. Just know this. Now look, Tennessee's a 6.5-point favorite for good reason tomorrow, but they're the better team this year. But just know this, St. Peter's, there's 351 teams that play Division I basketball that are eligible for the NCAA tournament. St. Peter's was 346th in effective field goal percentage. They are a horrible offensive basketball team. Horrible. They didn't even shoot 40% from the field this season as a team, which is incredibly hard to shoot under 40% as a team. So if you just tuned in to Tennessee last night, for the first time, and your reaction was, oh, Texas is going to get their ass kicked Saturday. Be careful. Tennessee's favored for a reason, but St. Peter's had no offensive capability at all. So Tennessee was going to bully them and choke them out, which they did. Saturday, look, Texas goes 1 for 14 from 3. They're going home, no doubt, okay? But this, I think it's going to be a competitive game as long as Texas can defend Dalton Connect. They don't really match up for Kinect. That's the issue on the wing. You're going to ask Dillon Mitchell to do something that I don't know if is up his alley guarding Kinect. But look, Tennessee's got to keep Texas in front of them. Now, I'll say this. Rick Barnes will not let Disu and Asmus beat him. He's too good of a coach. He's been doing it too long. Not going to happen. So the supporting cast is going to have to come up with 40 to 50 points tomorrow. If Texas supporting cast can do that, I think if you can get to 70, you got a chance tomorrow. But you're not going to win with 56. No chance at all tomorrow.
Texas needs Disu and Asmus to start faster than they did last night. I know that game turned into a rock fight basically from the jump with Texas starting 1-for-8 with 3 turnovers in the first 5 minutes. But you will not be able to keep up scoring-wise with Tennessee if you don't see Asmus and Disu start quickly again. That's the biggest key for me.
And the thing last night, they got good shots in the first 7-8 minutes of the game.
Yep.
I mean, and then Disu started pressing after that. But the first few minutes of the game, they got the looks they wanted out of the two-man game. So they got to get the shot. The shots have to fall. Tyrese Hunter has to. I don't care if he goes 2-for-11 tomorrow. Have some confidence and shoot the basketball.
You got to have confidence.
In 6 games, and you've been in the Sweet 16 or better your entire college career. I mean, that he's got to be more confident shooting the basketball. So we'll see what happens to Saturday night. I believe that game is at 7 p.m. on Saturday Central Time. But a lot to talk about. Some people want Kendall Weaver to start. Texas is going to bring Brock and Kendall off the bench. They love that energy. They love that change of pace they give them. I.T. Horton helps space the floor better when Disu's in the game at the beginning of the game. And there is something to be said for that because you can't leave Horton wide open. You can't do it. So I think that helps with the floor spacing to start a game. But I think Weaver and Brock are great coming off the bench for this for Texas.
Jerry, I got to ask, is your bracket still intact after day one?
You know, it's crazy. I didn't even fill out a bracket this year. We were so busy. I know. We were so busy that I didn't even get to it. But if I did, I wouldn't have Bijan's bracket.
No.
Perfect, baby. Perfect.
That is as impressive as anything I've seen.
I haven't looked at Bijan's bracket. How far does he have Texas going?
All the way. Yeah, so it's about to be busted. Yeah, it'll be busted. But I do remember you saying, though, Jerry, that you thought there would be a lot of upsets. And it seems early on, we got some upsets, busted up some brackets.
Yeah, maybe not as, almost maybe not as many as I thought there would be.
Today should be.
Because Nevada had an absolute gag job yesterday. That should have been a 6-11 winner. That should have been a winner. By the way, we have no information on if John Calipari is still alive in Lexington at the start of this live stream. But I can guarantee you this: there's going to be, I don't know how many for sale signs there actually are in yards in Lexington, but I'm thinking somebody's gathering them all up and they're all going to put them in one yard.
Going to have to be. Jerry, I'm kind of the opposite. You did not fill out a bracket. I did. KD35, I'm the best. I'm starting to wish I did not fill out a bracket right now because I did not too hot yesterday. I picked upsets that didn't upset, and I picked winners that did not win. So today might be a good a bounce back, but Northwestern just blew out FAU in overtime to start today. So we're off to an even tougher start right now than yesterday. So
yeah, hey, look, this is how, for people, again, this is how much you got to appreciate Texas winning around the 64 game 3 years in a row. I mean, Florida Atlantic was in the Final Four last year. They limped into the tournament, and they're going back to Boca. Not a bad place to go to after you get knocked out in around the 64, by the way. But the NCAA tournament is tough. So as bad as Texas looked last night offensively, and it was ugly, they're in around the 32 for the third straight year. I mean, you gotta tip the cap to the Texas program. That's big for this program.
Yeah,
Calipari is a lifetime contract. I don't know. I think they may give him $30 million to get the heck out of town after last night. But that's just me.
Hey, to your point, Jerry, Baylor just wrapped up their game, 92-67 win over Colgate. So that's their fifth straight win in the opening round. That to your point, tied for the third longest streak right now. Texas, again, finding a way into the round of 32 three straight years. It's not bad. Not as bad as you would have thought Texas would have made it out to be earlier this year.
Especially considering what transpired last year with Beard.
Yep.
So you literally kept that together. And then you, Rodney, after the season, had to start over again. I mean, you had two new head coaches in less than 3 years. And yep. then in college basketball, you have guys testing the water. I mean, it was a similar situation when Beard came in. Yet they looked around. They said they had Brock Cunningham and had to build a team around it. Last year, after Rodney gets the job, you know, Dylan Mitchell's going to try to go pro if his workouts are good. Tyrese Hunter's going to consider it for, you know, but it really wasn't going to happen. Brock Cunningham's back. Dylan Dessou, you don't know if he's playing again because he had a serious foot injury. You have Alex Anamakwe, who's not really factored in, and you're looking around saying, got to build a team. I mean, so that's a lot of turnover in less than a three-year period of time. So Texas getting it around the 32 3 years in a row is somewhat of an accomplishment considering what this program has been through in a short amount of time. Ladies tip off in 20 minutes, by the way. All right, so let's get back to spring football. I want to hit on something. CJ, your thoughts on kind of what you saw, Rod's thoughts. But one of the major things I've heard is the offensive line, two practices into the spring, is maybe a lot better than they were a year ago. And that doesn't surprise us, but I don't think, because of the experience. But what, Rod, why do you think this offensive line could take a next step next year? And then CJ, what did you see as well?
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
It's only a kick. A jump. A block. It's only a serve. It's only a tackle. A run. It's only for the fans. After all, it's only pressure. You got this. Adidas.
I think it's the experience and the depth they have, right? I mean, this hasn't. I don't think Texas had an offensive line this deep since the mid-2000s, right after Mack Brown had stockpiled a few classes to the mid to early 2000s was the last time they had a line with this type of depth, NFL talent potentially, with the frontline guys and then guys competing behind them. And you have guys that are elite maulers on that offensive line too. All right. You got some guys that, you know, they will, when you talk about a DJ Campbell, you're talking about guys who can be elite in terms of the running game. I think that also is something that Texas hadn't had in a while too. Guys who were elite run game blockers. I think that's going to help Texas. I think they will. Obviously the veterans on that offensive line having so much experience, the cohesion they have as a group, they work as a unit more so than any other group on the field. So I think having that experience and playing together, I think that's going to allow them to be really, really efficient and effective in terms of pass protection. A lot of pass protection is being hive-minded, being on the same page, seeing the same thing. So some of the issues they had with simulated pressures and picking up twists and stunts, which is usually a lot of passing off defenders, obviously in blitz protection, passing off defenders in pressure packages. That's communication and unspoken communication, more about experience, getting reps with it. I think now, and you have some, I mean, Cam Williams will be new to that line, but he's a guy that's now had some playing experience. I think those issues that gave Texas some problems in the last couple of years with a younger O-line, I don't think it'll give you any issues now with so many veterans on there who have played together for so long.
Yeah, that I'm going to echo the exact same thing. You have guys across that board who are old now, you know, and that's key for the trenches, you know, where the longer you've been in the college weight room, the longer you've been in the offensive system, the more you look comfortable, the more that you look like you can go impose your will on the guy across from you. And it certainly helps adding a guy that's 360 pounds to be the newcomer of the group who probably in the run game might be the most physical because he is just that big and he can move that well. On that right side, you're going to see a lot of movement with DJ Campbell and Cam Williams in the running game. It's going to be very exciting, and I really do think when you look at this group holistically, they check a lot of the boxes. You know, you have cornerstone tackles with Kelvin Banks and Cam Williams. You got guys with a lot of athleticism on the interior, specifically with DJ Campbell, who was listed at 332. But if you look at him in person a little bit, I think he's probably closer to 325 or maybe even 320 than what he's currently listed at. He looks really, really good and athletic. And, hey, if you're at 320 and you're looking that good, you're going to be all right. And then left guard is probably the big question mark. Where do they go? What do they do? I think you can't go wrong. You're either adding a guy that has 3 years of starting experience, or you have a guy who just beat him out that found that extra gear, if you will, towards the end of last year, or even a guy that started as a true freshman 2 years ago in Cole Hudson. So, hey, a really good problem to have if you're Kyle Flood figuring out the best five, because right now the four other pieces that you have cemented in at the moment, pretty darn good football players. Mm-hmm.
And I'll add this too. Rod, how big do you think it is? So last year, DJ Campbell is a first-year starter. When he looked to his left, there was Jake Majors. When he looked to his right, there was Christian Jones. That's a level of comfort, right? Yep.
Mm-hmm.
This year, when he looks to his right, he may be having to help.
Okay. Yeah, you become that guy. Yeah.
How big of a step is that up for DJ Campbell in year two then? Because he's going to have – last year he had all that experience kind of helping him. Mm-hmm. This year, when he looks to his right, he's not. He's going to be the more experienced player. That's different for DJ Campbell in year two.
There's no doubt. I mean, it'll be a challenge for him because, in a sense, he'll become a mentor and a tutor at times, right, in terms of the alignment, assignment, making sure that they're all on the same page, especially on the side. But at least you got Jake Majors to one side, right? You got a veteran center. And I've talked to Jay Majors. I mean, really high football IQ. I mean, this guy gets it. He does. So I think it will be a challenge. But I think that's as you get older and as a player, you look forward to some of those roles and responsibilities. That's part of being a leader on the team.
Yeah.
It's taking the younger guys up under your wing. I remember when I had young players playing in the secondary, like a young Huff Daddy and a young Cedric Griffin. It is, a part of your responsibility to make sure that those guys, hey, check in with them. Hey, alignment assignment, you guys got this, to make sure that you kind of echo and reaffirm a lot of the things that you were talking about in practice, just to make sure these guys are all on the same page, to make sure that they understand what their roles, responsibilities are within the defense or on the offensive line. So I think it's something that most players look forward to. And whether you want to or not, if you're a good player and you're a leader on the team, you end up in that situation whether you want to, whether you relish it or not. It's almost kind of the passing of the torch when you have to – you go from being the mentee and go from being tutored to being the mentor. And everybody on the team, I think in one point, once you get to be an older player, you become that in some way, form, or fashion.
By the way, just a Bijan Robinson bracket update. He's 18 for 18 after two games.
Wow.
18 for 18. So
that's crazy.
Hey, that's the – you know, crazy. That's the guy that needs to win the $1 million bracket challenge, by the way.
Wow.
I really hope that happens for him. He needs it. All right, Patrick Page. Can somebody bring up the Patrick Page question at 146? CJ, if you see that. Anthony Hill Jr. more Jesse Armstead or Ray Lewis? I say neither. Oh. I say neither for Anthony Hill. Ray Lewis, I'll tell you what was crazy. When I was at ESPN Under Armour, we ran the RL52 camp. We'd invite a lot of the top high school linebackers down to IMG for a weekend of football with Ray Lewis at the linebacker position. And we had some of the top college guys come in. And if you watched Ray Lewis in a film session before you ever saw his pregame celebration and him knocking helmets off of people, on film, it was one of the most impressive things I've ever seen in football. Wow. His smart at the inside backer position was off the charts. The way he communicated it, the way he taught these kids. I can't remember what he said, but you know, he read the triangle drill, he would always talk about what percentage of the time he was right. You know, and it was high 90s. Okay. Without false stepping, high 90s. So, but I think they're different players, right? I mean, is there any comparison for Anthony Hill for you guys? I think maybe too early, or a little, you know, a little bit.
Not off the top of my head, not right now. And I do think the way they're going to use him, they're going to move him around a little bit, show off his versatility, keep him on the edge at times, situationally. And, yeah, so I don't really have one right now. I do think he's a guy that, in these days, that's tough to say, has round one potential as a linebacker. He's got that kind of upside. If he's utilized the right way and if he continues on the right developmental track, he does have that kind of athletic profile.
Okay,
Jerry, I'll throw a name at you.
Miami is why I asked. So that he came back and asked on that. Okay.
I'll throw a name at you. What's the differentiation of a guy like Jordan Hicks and Anthony Hill early?
Jordan was so injured. That's a tough one. You know, Jordan really battled injuries.
Yeah.
At Texas. So that's a tough one for me. Yeah, some people say Micah Parsons for Anthony Hill. I mean, he's bigger than you think he is. Anthony Hill. I need some time. I need to think about that one as well. There's nobody that's really popping in my mind as far as that goes. Right. So we'll see there. Zane Petty, can David Benda become an NFL draft pick? Rod, CJ, opinions?
Listen, we saw two guys this year who we probably didn't think would be in the draft, probably solidify themselves in the mid-round this year, Ryan Watts and Christian Jones. It could happen. It's going to take a big jump for David Benda because we haven't seen years of on-field consistent production like we've seen with Christian Jones, who was a three-year starter, a four-year contributor. Ryan Watts was a two-year starter with being on the field sparingly at Ohio State before coming over. Benda's been, you know, on the field at times over the last two seasons, but he's not been a consistent piece of that Texas defense. It's going to take a big jump for him to be in the draft conversation next year. He does have athleticism to his side, but can he bridge the gap from dropping into coverage and being that big run support piece that he already is? We know what he can do rushing the passer as well. The big clip against Alabama, a big sack that he made in week two last year. Consistency and production is going to be the key for him to make that step and kind of vault into that conversation.
Real quick, I'll update. I know this is going to come as a big shock, but Shaka Smart's down 8 with 2 minutes to go in the first half. I know that's going to shock Texas fans, okay? And if anybody
can win, guess who had that right in their bracket? Guess who?
Bijan has San Diego State and Western Kentucky. They're up in both.
Bijan knows.
I really hope Bijan gets the million. I mean, he needs
that. Would
it
be awesome.
Bijan knows.
18.
I'll say this about the Benda thing. Just a hard path to the NFL from a backup linebacker. So if he get, first of all, win the job at Texas, he wins the job at Texas, I think it'll make him the possibility of him getting drafted, I think those odds will increase exponentially. If he doesn't win the job, I'm not saying he still can't be it. I played with a guy, Marcus Wilkins, who never started at Texas at linebacker, ended up playing in the league like, I don't know, 7-8 years in the league. And it was a different league back then. I think mostly he was like a special teams ace, but it can still happen. And so I it's really interesting this year if he can really penetrate either that rotation at that off-ball linebacker, become the one of the regular guys they rotate, not just someone who matches up against heavy personnel and run heavy teams, win that job. That'll make it a whole lot easier. And I don't know how he's going to test linebackers. That's not really a huge thing. But for a guy, if you don't win the job, you'd have to stand out some other way to NFL scouts. And it would have to be through, you know, a magnificent workout and testing really well. And I don't see Benda as that kind of guy either. So I think Benda's got to – he's got to get stuff on film. The NFL scouts will go, hey, I see something. That guy can play linebacker. The NFL has an issue right now at linebacker. What you're starting to see is, first of all, the value of the position has been pushed down because you don't see a lot of linebackers getting drafted in the first round. So the value is considered a non-essential position, or at least not a premium position. So that alone will push it down. But if you start to see, like, the linebackers, the off-ball linebackers in the NFL who are – make it all pros. Now, there are exceptions to the rule, but if you go look at most of them that are making those all pro teams, a lot of those are veteran linebackers. They're older guys. So they're starting to think that maybe playing off-ball linebacker in the NFL is something that needs to be – it's because you have to be a problem solver, because everything happens faster. Football IQ and football acumen are really, really important there, that older players seem to be doing better at off-ball linebacker than the younger players in the NFL with the RPO game, with the dual-threat quarterbacks, with so much happening in so many different ways to exploit those linebackers. It seems like those guys who have more NFL experience, that they're actually translating really well. and not the young linebackers. That's just been a trend, and maybe it's just an outlier of a trend, but it's been a trend lately that the veteran linebackers, those are the ones who are having the most success in the league, not the young guys. They're not translating like that as quickly as they would like.
Hey, CJ, can you bring up Nate Russ's question at 153? We're going to have some fun with this. But first of all, we had another question before I just want to answer. Somebody asked, would Texas women be the favorite to win the national championship if Roy Hatton got hurt, Roy Harmon? I don't think they would. South Carolina is the prohibitive favorite this year. They're undefeated for a reason. But I do think Texas may have been the number two seed in the whole tournament. So which means, you know, they wouldn't have matched them up in the Final Four necessarily. In that dream scenario, they would have matched South Carolina up at the fourth number one, and Caitlin Clark in Texas could have met in the Final Four.
But, Jerry, do you think you would have seen Madison Booker take the leap that she did?
No. She would still be she's just a top three pick in the draft, but she wouldn't have had to lead a team. So that would have been the difference. It's accelerated her as a player so much. What happened? Can we bring up Nate Russ's question again? That was a fun. Okay. So here's what I'm going to say to this. I don't know if Texas is going to score 56 against Colorado State on 831, but I know Quinn will do better than 1 for 14 on downfield passes in that game.
Hey, that halftime score of 27-11. I mean,
I will take the over on 27 probably.
I think you can both look at both scores and say, all right, Texas should eclipse or, you know, prevent 11 points from being on the board in that game. But hey, it'll be fun to you know, kind of compare and pick and prod those games whenever they come. That'll be fun.
All right, let's reset this a little bit. We're talking spring practice. I haven't talked to Rod since Pro Day, so we're about to get Rod's thoughts on what he saw from Quinn. I know it's on air. Doesn't matter. Two NFL scouts, Rod, said he missed one throw Wednesday. That makes you money. I don't care. And that gives you a hell of a lot of confidence, too, by the way. But let's reset the show real quick. We're talking spring practice, two practices in. No practice today. Coaches convention today. Recruits on campus. We went through Brandon Brown. CJ already talked to Brandon Brown before his visit. We'll have more after the visit. Texas basketball around the 32, three straight years, one of eight teams that have done that now. That number will get up to 9 or 10 tonight. So that's pretty good air Texas is in. And then the women are about to tip off here in 5 minutes. But we haven't, Rod, I haven't had a chance to ask you on Pro Day. I know you've seen the video of Quinn. You know, some of your takeaways there? I mean, I got to tell you, being there in person, CJ, being in there in person, that brought back memories the first time I ever went to South Lake Carroll, and I was there for a walkthrough, and I know it was a walkthrough on air. The ball never hit the ground for an hour and a half, and it was never really outside the catch radius for an hour and a half. And I walked away from there saying, this kid's got a real, real, real chance. But that's what yesterday reminded me of on air.
Yeah.
Rob, what did you see? What were your takeaways from that?
Yeah, no surprise at all. And I even said before the workout, I said the scouts and NFL execs and coaches are going to be blown away with Quinn in this workout when he's wearing t-shirts and he's throwing to receivers he's got chemistry with, he's been working with for the last couple of years. And it does, that tracks, right? That aligns with what we know about Quinn and the scouting report. What we know about Quinn is he's a timing throw. He's a great on timing throws. He's great when he's in rhythm as a thrower. He's fantastic with first read throws, meaning things that Sark schemes open when he doesn't have to really go through a progression, not expect to go through a progression. When Sark tells him, hey, this guy's going to be wide open on this route, I've schemed it open with the formation, the personnel package, and our pre-snap motions, he's going to be wide open. I don't know if there's a better quarterback in the country at delivering the ball on time and accurate with great touch than Quinn is on first read throws. Now, this actually does, like I said, it's why it tracks, right? Because when you're throwing on air, I know exactly where I'm going with the football. It's one route, boom. I'm going straight to that guy. I'm not going through a progression. I don't have to worry about pressure. The two things that Quinn's got to work on are the things that, you know, obviously he can't work on out there, you know, when he's throwing on air with t-shirts on, is he's feeling the pressure in the pocket and getting deeper into progressions. Now, when CJ tells me that Mike McDaniels is there and that when Quinn throws, he's just close as he can get. without getting all in his grill. He's trying to get as close up in terms of trying to see exactly the mechanics and the footwork and the throwing motion. And the reason that fits is because Tua is also a first read rhythm thrower. Yep. Right. That's why they run more RPOs than anybody else in the league. They don't want Tua working off schedule. They don't even really want Tua working deep into the progressions very much. They want Tua throwing to the first read. They want Tua throwing on time, on rhythm. And that's when Quinn is at his best, when he's on time, first read, wide window throws. And that's what Mike McDaniels is going to do for you. He's going to scheme open wide window throws with all that speed. So I'm not saying that he's going to draft Quinn Ewers, but it makes sense as to why he was so interested in Quinn Ewers, because Quinn Ewers actually fits the system that he has there with Tua. The reason Tua's getting the ball out so quickly is because Mike McDaniels decided that he was going to insulate him in pass protection with the quick game. Getting the ball out faster with the RPO, he said that is the key to pass protection for us, not getting more and more offensive linemen, getting the ball out quicker. And that's kind of the key for Quinn in pass protection. Quinn gets in trouble in terms of self-sacks and self-pressures when he's got deeper into the progression, and then he starts seeing the pressure instead of feeling the pressure and maneuvering in the pocket. And those are the things he's going to have to work on. But out there throwing on air with those scouts, I don't know if there's a quarterback that'll look better, honestly, than Quinn Ewers out there.
It all goes back to how natural and how easy it is to see mm-hmm. that ball come off of his hands. Jerry, you mentioned it whenever you went to South Lake Carroll back when he was in high school. You watch him throw in person. I know it's a little different when you see him in a game. But when you see him just in those casual kind of routes on air or early practice settings, when it's not as you know, intense or high tempo that we see at times. But it's just an effortless release, you know, and I think at times that gets mistaken for laziness or lackadaisical approach to the position of quarterback. But since it is so natural, it feels like, you know, there is room to improve. And technically he's not, you know, the most, sound quarterback when it comes to the fundamentals. But as a result, I mean, he puts the ball where it needs to go more times than it doesn't. And I think right now what he did very well of on that big stage is handling the pressure of 90-plus scouts, three NFL coaches right over his shoulder, and five NFL receivers or pass catchers looking at him to say, hey, my stock is dependent on how well you put the ball in my vicinity. So I thought, you know, it was a tremendous showing for Quinn, not only on the field, but in the mental side of things, which is something that we've been looking at to say, all right, like, where can he improve? It's the mental side of things, and also, you know, the self-sacks, the red zone, everything that comes along with that.
Hey, Rod, this was my takeaway, and we talked about this before the NFL Combine. Quinn Ewers essentially he was not a football player Wednesday. He was a PGA Tour golfer out on the driving range with all the swing instructors watching everything he did.
Great
from
point.
His address to the ball, to his takeaway, right, to his rhythm. That is as close as it comes to having PGA Tour golfer pressure. When there's no helmet, there's no body in your huddle, there's Sark's not calling plays, you're out there on your own. Yes, you're comfortable with the JT Sanders and the three wideouts, but this is a different pressure outside of playing at Alabama and in a Big 12 championship game, OU in a college football playoff. This is the most pressure you can feel as a quarterback because 96 scouts are all watching you. They're looking for warts.
Yep.
They want to see that swing get stuck behind you and you push the drive 20 yards right, right? So I thought he did a great job Wednesday because that's an arena he's never been in before.
Agreed.
And that gives you confidence. That's the thing. That's the thing I'm going to take away from this. I think Quinn looks more confident. He's stronger behind his neck. He looks stronger. So he was already going to have more confidence than year three in a system. I think he's going to walk away from Wednesday as confident as he can be as a thrower of the football. Because that was a good performance in a pressure setting that he hasn't been in before. He knows walking in Wednesday that this could be worth seven figures or eight figures potentially for him.
Yep.
It's all that's pressure. I don't care what anyone says. That's pressure.
That's a great point, Jerry. I totally agree. And I'll say this. You know, in big games, he has responded really well. He has played well in big games. So I will say that he does handle pressure And maybe it goes back to the point where he's very even keel, right? You never see him get too high or too low emotionally. Some Longhorn fans don't like that, right? They want to see him be more rah-rah and see him be more passionate. But coaches actually like a quarterback who has more of an even demeanor and a baseline. And I think Quinn has that in big games, Bama, Oklahoma games. I mean, he actually has played Big 12 title game. He's played some of his best football in those big games, bowl game against Washington. He's played some of his best football in those big games. And I think maybe, you know, that's part of his, you know, natural football character, that he does handle pressure relatively well.
No doubt.
Yeah. Hey, we saw that after the first two interceptions against Oklahoma this year. What do you go, 18 for 18 and 350 yards? Like, that is exactly it. You know, the mental side of things and kind of that even keelness is exactly what you get with Quinn Ewers. Real quick, we have one more super chat to get to, and I wanted to pose it for Rod. Do you see us rotating as much as we did in the secondary last year? Who do you think will be our ball hawk back there? Will it be Malik Muhammad, maybe even that Andrew Makuba? Jordan, thank you for it, the super chat. You know,
thank you, Jordan. I'm
excited to hear what Rod's got here.
I think your ball hawks are going to be Malik Muhammad. And I'll go with, that's good. I wish it would be Jadae Barron, but I don't think that's Jadae Barron's game to be a ball hawk. I think more maybe a young Derek Williams with his ability to diagnose plays and the foot speed and ability he has back there. So maybe the two youngsters, I think, in the secondary are going to be your two ball hawks. But I love me some Manny Muhammad. I love the report from Bobby Burton today. Go check it out on TexasFootball.com about Manny Muhammad. It's a nice report in there. I won't spoil too much of it. Go check it out. But it's a good report about the progress of one Manny Muhammad. And he's one of my favorites. I think he's a natural man-to-man cover guy. With, in terms of the rotation, I would like the rotations to have more, I don't know, there need to be a more of a rhyme and a reason to them. I need, you know, I mean, it seems like to me that there's really no method to the rotations. I'd like to see there be a method, whether it's situational or whether it's, you know, a certain amount of series. And then maybe half of those series that you have your frontline starters, you can break that down and then throw in the backups in there. Or, you know, when you have certain groups that are playing together in certain combinations in the secondary, find out which combinations work best together. Rather than, it's a second group, they play together, and then this is the starter frontline group. Because sometimes different combinations of safeties and defensive backs, depending on their skill sets, they work better together. So I would like to see more, I don't know, I guess I see being more judicious about the rotations. I just think right now they're doing it just because they have a lot of depth. Anyone got to be fresh for the fourth quarter. So I don't, in short, I don't like the rotations. I think they should rotate less. Still rotate. But rotate less and have, like I said, be more judicious about it. Have a more thought into the combinations of the rotations of guys in the secondary.
Hey, UT boy had a comment at 202. That one. Yes. I wanted us to get into this, okay? People are going to be able to guess who told me this after I go through it. So I was discussing Quinn with a then former quarterback that was an OC who's now a head coach. Okay, so y'all can all guess who I'm talking about, who I've known a long time. We were having a discussion one day. And what he said about Quinn has always stuck with me. He said, people will always underrate how much skipping his senior year hurt him in his development as a leader.
Mm.
Because he missed a senior year. When you're at Southlake, you're not just a leader of the Southlake Carroll Dragons football team who would have been favored to win state or play again for state, but you're also the leader in your community at that point, a community that's all in on football. He said, so instead of that, having that year, you go to Ohio State where you pretty much, you know, you're a scout team guy. You kind of are homesick. You're never going to be a leader of a team like that. You're not even going to work on leadership skills in that scenario. Then you transfer to Texas where you're in. It wasn't a quarterback competition, but for the sake of, let's say, and keeping Hudson Carr from transferring after Quinn transferred in, let's say it was a competition. So you weren't going to be a leader in that scenario either. So he fell behind about 2 years in a leadership from his leadership development, Rod. Do you buy that? You agree with the quarterback that said that?
the rationale is, I mean, it's sound. It does make a lot of sense. I love what you said about him being a leader in the community, because that's essentially what you are at Texas when you become the starting quarterback, right? You're almost seen as someone who is an ambassador for the university, ambassador for the brand. So, yeah, there are a lot of folks in this metropolis that we call Austin, Texas, that want the time, and they want, you know, they want some one-on-one time. They like the brand of Quinn Ewers to associate with their brand, whatever it may be. And for a starting quarterback, I mean, that can be a lot when you're not used to that. And then the leadership, like you said, on the team, that's an interesting theory. And I think it's sound. I mean, it holds water to me. I like that theory. Yeah.
That the guy that said it was a pretty good player all at the University of Texas. So we'll go with it.
And makes sense, though.
Yeah, exactly. All right. So, guys, women's game starting right now. They're a couple of minutes in. Shaka Smart down at halftime in the NCAA tournament. That's a complete shock, let me tell you. Western Kentucky scored 43. San Diego State up about half a dozen in the second half. So we're really on Bijan Robinson bracket watch until Texas tips off Saturday night against Tennessee. We've kind of run through that. Rick Barnes versus Texas. Chris Ogden was his first recruit at Texas. Frank Hay, Rodney Terry were both associate head coaches for him. Assistants on the Final Four team, along with Russ Springman. Then when Frank Haith left, then Rodney Terry left, Chris Ogden ended up being an assistant coach at Texas. Went with Rick to Tennessee before going to Texas Tech under Beard. So much going on game within the game Saturday. It's going to be fun. It'll be fun for Texas fans. It'll be fun for Rick Barnes. It won't be fun for whoever loses. By the way, one other thing with that game. It's been 20 years since Texas advanced to Sweet 16 or better back-to-back seasons. The coach, Rick Barnes. That's also the last time Rick Barnes ever advanced to back-to-back Sweet 16s. Something's got to give tomorrow night. Either Texas is going to break that string or Rick Barnes is going to break that string. Somebody's going to the Sweet 16, and somebody will go to the Sweet 16 that has it 2 years in a row that hadn't done it in 20 years. So that's another little thing with the game tomorrow.
I like that. Yeah.
That's a good note. That'll be fun to watch.
Yeah, the stats tell you, though, that Rick Barnes, and I've been looking at all of these, that Rick Barnes struggles this time of year. And that, you know, that Rick Barnes team seem to, this time of year, seem to play subpar basketball. They're underwhelmed. So we'll see. Hopefully that's the case versus the Longhorns.
Yeah. Yeah. Hopefully. UT boy said, Rod, is Jonte the truth? You know,
and listen, I heard all the guys at the combine when they were talking about the players who are still on the roster. And man, I think they complimented Jonte Cook more than any other player. And I know they didn't know Isaiah Bond probably as well because he wasn't on campus. But when it was Jonathan Brooks or where there was Tavondre Sweat, Byron Murphy, you know, JT Sanders, X-Man, AD Mitchell, I think I heard all of them pretty much at one point say something really complimentary about Jonte Cook and how he was going to have a breakout campaign and he was going to be a great player. So I trust the players because they're in practice every day. They get to watch him. They get to watch the work ethic. You know, X-Men basically says he's a mini-me. JT Sanders says he's going to be just like X-Men. Their games are nothing like in terms of their skill set. But Will Sark funnel usage to Jonte Cook like he did in X-Men. That's the conversation. Who's going to be the number one wide receiver? I think you'll get a 1A and 1B kind of how you did this year, right? A.D. Mitchell was kind of your weapon when you got close to the red zone, you know, once you got deep into the red zone, and X-Men was pretty much in between the 20s, the main weapon in the passing game there. I think you may get something very similar, just not in terms of that situation, but just that Isaiah Bond is a different type of weapon in the passing game than Jonte Cook. Maybe it's levels of the passing game, right? Maybe Jonte Cook is more of your short to intermediate threat and Bond is more of your intermediate to deeper threat. Because we know Sark wants, hey, they showed off that deep ball for Quinn too at that pro day, right? They're tired of that. They know NFL scouts, they know they got that on their checklist of things Quinn Ewers needs to work on, and they wanted to show out. No, I mean, he's got a really beautiful deep ball. That was it's an outlier. We know people are saying that the narrative is he's got a bad deep ball and he's inefficient, ineffective at the deep ball. They want to show that off, and I think this season, or at least early on, they're going to start off throwing some deep balls until Sark is deterred by either ineffectiveness or it blows up in their face by putting them in second and long and third and long if they don't convert those deep balls. But you're going to see it early. No doubt.
Yeah, and I think the key yesterday, too, or Wednesday, was, look, Quinn along the right sideline, deep ball seems to be his worst throw he makes as a quarterback. Down the middle of the field, he's actually a lot more accurate throwing the deep ball. If you just look from high school tape and thus far in college tape. Before we get going today, we're going to take two or three more questions. I need to take a second again for the sponsor of the Friday Longhorn live stream, and that is Andy Ludicky at MyPerfectFranchise.net. Are you stuck in the corporate rat race with 2 weeks PTO and no control over the money you can make or your schedule in general? Schedule in general is the big one. Call Andy. He will take you through a process to help and find a business that will fit your skill sets and financial goals. Franchise ownership isn't for everyone, but if you have the desire to take control of your own destiny, call Andy or email him at andy@myperfectfranchise.net. If you have any other specific questions about Andy's process, Bobby Burton has been through that process. He'll answer questions for you, get you over to Andy Ludicky as well. So again, thank you very much to Andy and MyPerfectFranchise.net for being the sole sponsor of the Friday Longhorn live stream.
Good stuff. Thank you, Andy, as well. Jerry, I got a question for you. Let's see. I mean, with this offense that we've talked about, the offensive line, Quinn, the receivers, the running backs, which might have five, if we were to go worst case scenario for this team going into the fall, what's your biggest point of, I guess, question or concern with this unit right now?
Say that again. Repeat that real quick.
What's your biggest area of concern or any big question marks that you have with this unit?
Yeah, so to me, it's Cam Williams, game in, game out, first-year starter, right tackle. I think left tackle's an All-American. I think whether Hayden Connor is the guy or if somebody beats him out, I think you're going to be sound there. I think Hayden Connor's got his strength. I think Aneto would have his strength or Cole Hudson would have his strength. I think center, obviously extremely experienced. I think DJ Campbell's it's going to take a big step in year two. So to me, if for the offensive line maximizing next year, it's going to come down to Cam Williams at right tackle in his first year starting. I thought he played really well other than pre-snap penalties against Kansas State. He's going to be a future NFL draft pick. The key is for me is, and when I look at this, the guys that want to go pro early if they can, I always say this, if these guys are able to leave and go pro early, you've had a hell of a season on the field. If Cam Williams goes from starting one game to a guy that has a decision to make next year, then Texas will have had a hell of a season to me. To me, that's the question mark. If Cam Williams comes through and plays at a high level at right tackle, Texas is going to have the best offensive line they've had since the January win over USC.
Yeah, I'm with you. And, Rod, I'm going to pose this one to you. We didn't get to see Jonathan Brooks this offseason, in this winter, going back to the Senior Bowl, the Combine, the Pro Day, still recovering from his ACL. But where do you see him getting drafted right now? Ekim thinks before the fourth round might be a possibility.
I know at one point I was pretty sure he would be the top running back drafted, and it still could be the case, but I'm not certain about that anymore just because you've had some running backs work out pretty well. The truth is this is considered by NFL scouts to be a weaker running back draft, and it doesn't help the value of the running back position overall now in terms of this draft class is that they had a really talented, loaded free agency class of running backs in the NFL. Mm-hmm. I mean, it was loaded. It's still got some really good running backs out there in that free agent class of running backs. So that doesn't help. So the truth is you may get your first running back taken late in the second round. I believe the lowest a running back has been taken is the 54th pick. The first running back, the lowest the first running back drafted has been taken in the draft is the 54th overall pick. It's possible you could be somewhere close to that in this draft because there's not one going in the first round. And I don't even know if there's one going in the top of the second round. And I think maybe toward the middle of the second round, that's when you'll start to see someone look at the value of the running back position. So I think he will get – I think right now he'll be the second or the third running back potentially drafted on the board. And that'll be before the fourth, though. So I do think he'll go before the fourth just because he's the best running back considered by some on the board. It's only the injury issues that have turned some teams off. But some teams, like the Cowboys, who's surgeon actually did Jonathan Brooks' surgery, they may decide if he's there in the third round, damn, this is too good of a value to pass up. We have inside info on his recovery and the surgery, and we trust our trainers, so we going to do it. We got our running back of the future, and we need one anyway. So it still could be a team who has a luxury pick like that. I don't think they'll let him go past the fourth round. I think in the third round is where they'll start looking at Jay Brooks.
All right, guys, that's going to do it for this Friday edition of Longhorn Live Stream. We're going to go watch the women's game, watch the NCAA tournament. Right. We'll be back again with a lot of content on ontexasfootball.com and all here on the YouTube channel throughout the weekend. So for Andy Ludicky, my perfect franchise, for CJ Vogel, for Rod Babers, this is Jerry Hamilton. You guys enjoy your Friday, and we'll talk to you again tomorrow.
Welcome.
Y'all have a good weekend.